Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, that's day 13 in the books, folks, and our men's singles final is set. It will be Rafael Nadal going for an extraordinary 14th French Open title and Casper Ruud going for a first. It'll also be a first ever meeting between these two, a first ever Grand Slam final for Casper Ruud. There's going to be all sorts on the line. But that does not tell the story of today by any means, does it? Because it was a weird one in Paris today. And I think it all started with the weather, didn't it? The weather was Roland Garros's very own pathetic fallacy today. Mm. It was humid and strange and close and claustrophobic and ultimately a little bit disappointing.
Yeah, I think I blame the weather for most of it, because that's how it makes you feel. You know, it puts us on a bit of a downer, really, when you leave the apartment. And I'd seen the weather app, and it was a big sunshine with a bit of night cloud.
David was making big promises about the weather today.
Yeah.
I specifically asked David what the weather's going to be. Glorious, I think, was the word.
Glorious. Except when I got to the site, it was starting to rain. There was a big black cloud over the Parc des Princes. And I thought, oh, that's just a passing shower. That won't last long. And then it did last long. And then the roof was closed and it created the most humid and just uncomfortable day of weather, really, until about 7 o'clock. And encapsulated the entirety of the first semi-final, which was just weird from start to finish, really.
Mm. And the second one was pretty weird in its own way as well. We'll obviously talk about both of them in detail. I mean, yeah, at the risk of definitely using a sort of GCSE level turn of phrase, a cloud hung over Roland Garros today, literally and metaphorically.
See what you did there.
Mm. Thank you very much.
I liked it.
I didn't really get it, but I liked it, yeah.
Nothing further to add? Something no, A-level standard, maybe, Matt? Come on,
help
us.
That's going to be a theme of the podcast. I don't know how much I have to say about today. It was all just so weird.
Great, okay, well, let's crack on. Let's go in chronological order, shall we? Let's start with Rafael Nadal against Alexander Zverev. As you said, David, this started with the roof on, and we believe the rule is at Roland Garros that if it starts with the roof on, it finishes with the roof on, regardless of whether the weather clears up throughout.
Did it clear
or
up?
At some, any stage. It did, yeah.
It stopped raining during the match, yeah.
I mean, what do you think of that rule, first of all? Do you think that that's right, that if you start under those conditions, you keep them? Because I thought really at the end of the set where it stops raining, just open the plumbing roof.
I suppose that, you know, when the match starts with the roof open, they don't, and then it starts raining.
Close the roof.
They close the roof.
Play the match.
They don't wait for it to be the same conditions.
Yeah.
So I suppose it's weird that they don't do the opposite. It's weird that they sort of once the weather clears up, they don't open the roof. You know, it's an outdoor tournament. I think I would prefer that, really.
I'm guessing the justification they would use is they don't want to unnecessarily interrupt a match. Mm. But, I mean, these roofs open and close pretty quickly these days, don't they? And as we'll come on to in due course, there were some pretty lengthy delays at the end of sets or at the end of the one full set that we had in this match anyway. So it seemed like there was ample opportunity to open that reef. But anyway, it started with the reef closed and it abruptly ended with the reef closed and as well. And goodness me, rarely have the conditions been so determinative of a match, I don't think. Maybe that sounds... I mean, conditions are always a prominent factor in a match, but wow, they were everything today for that match, weren't they? I mean, Rafael Nadal explained it very, very well after the match. He said, people think that heavy conditions favour clay quarters. He said, they do not. He said, the humid conditions today don't favour traditional clay quarters that play with a lot of spin. He said they favour flat, big hitters. Alexander Zverev-style hitters, David.
Yeah, I can believe that, because if I think back to the early 90s when they played the Hamburg tournament, which was always very heavy and often wet, Andrei Medvedev used to just clean up because he could hit through the conditions. And... you know, he might play a Felix Mantilla or someone like that who's rolling with topspin, and he would just bulldoze these people. So I can believe that. I mean, I had John Millman, Roger Federer, US Open vibes with how sweaty it all was. I mean, watching Zverev hit a ball and his racket just completely come out of his hand because he couldn't hold onto the grip. Nadal changed his clothes at the end of the first set, which admittedly was an hour and a half long set. And when he came out, because he was fresh again, he was a different player for about three games. And then he got sopping wet again, and his game went off again.
Turns out after sort of 20 years of Rafael Nadal, we've learned something new about him, which is he doesn't like playing in sopping wet pants.
No.
And nor would any of us.
He was having to... asked the ball kids to give him the ball because he couldn't fit a ball in his pocket, you know, for his second serve. If he missed the first serve, he was having to request the ball. He physically couldn't get the ball in his pocket because his shorts were so soaked and tight to his skin. Oh. It was awful.
I mean, they're a tight short anyway, aren't they? Mm. And yeah, there's no room for any
there are certain
additional
shorts,
factors.
Rafa, that you could have worn that'd have been nice and airy. Not those.
It was very strange seeing Rafael Nadal in those conditions. I'm sure over the course of his career we've seen him play in conditions like that on clay, but when it happened, I probably wasn't in the stadium to see it. That I'd never seen anything like that.
Well, we haven't had indoors very
from Nadal much. With my own eyes before. He was putting everything that he had into the ball, and everything that Nadal has is a lot. You know, he's one of the most fearsome hitters the sport has ever seen. Zverev himself, on the eve of the tournament, described the way Nadal hits the ball here at Roland Garros as, you know, being something that struck awe into him, quite frankly. And he's putting all of that into the ball, and it's giving him nothing in return. The ball just absorbs it, and it goes nowhere. There's no productivity to the effort, and it made me feel exhausted to watch it, to see that much effort going in for so little reward.
Completely. And it's remarkable how little it seems to affect his mood on the court. I mean, he was clearly annoyed by the conditions today. Well, not annoyed, but
he did a sign at one point, which I assume was the balls.
How big the ball is.
Getting
he
huge.
Mentioned that in press. The balls are so big.
Yeah.
Fluffing up, I suppose, aren't they, in those conditions?
And yet, he does have an ability to just accept it and play the match. And, yeah, there were little moments of frustration, but generally he just got on with it, and he had to, because the first six games, Zverev was playing as well as Alexander Zverev can play, smashing the ball, dominating the rallies.
Total confidence, wasn't there, in his
conviction in the ball strike.
Getting most of his first serves in. It was the Alexander Zverev complete performance for six games, and Nadal had to weather it and stick with him, and that was difficult because the conditions were favouring Zverev so much. And yet, of course, Nadal did and just gradually worked his way back into that opening set, and as soon as it got tight, and as soon as he did manage to put Zverev under pressure, Zverev did start to miss and start to miss the first serve and double fault a bit and crack generally. But it was very, very tough for Nadal from the start. You know, it wasn't like Nadal made a good start and the conditions slowly took their toll on him. It was a struggle immediately. Like, first game, he got broken, didn't he? Mm. And you just knew this was going to be a very, very tough day for Nadal.
He said, "My ball was not bouncing as usual here. I wasn't able to push him back. He was always on the front foot." He said, "I had a lot of surviving moments today." And we'll come on to the second set, obviously, shortly. But even the first set felt like an active survival for Rafael Nadal in many ways. For the first six games, as you say, because of how brilliant Alexander Zverev was. But even then, when Zverev dropped off, you still felt like Nadal was relying on the errors from Zverev, which is a precarious place for Nadal to be. He doesn't want to be leaving it in the hands of whoever's down the other end of the court. He wants to be in charge of his own destiny, and it didn't feel for large parts of that match that he was, until the moment came and he took it into his own hands. But that wasn't until the very pointy, sharpest end of the set in the tiebreak.
6-2, he was behind. Four consecutive set points. And I don't know what percentage I'd give that Nadal taking it and Zverev handing it. But it's some of both. I think that's inevitable, really, when you have a serve like Zverev's, because really, one of the 2 points that he has on his serve there, he should be hitting an unreturnable serve.
And he missed a pretty simple volley on one of the set points, Zverev. He had landed a big first serve, and he had the volley, and he just hit it into the net. But then Nadal saved them, I would say, from that point. And in particular, the one he was pushed out wide on the backhand side. He stretched for it. He was off the court. He was practically in the flower beds at the side of the Philippe Chatrier court. Zverev hit a cross-court backhand, and Nadal scrambled across and whipped a forehand winner cross-court.
Acute angle.
The place erupted, and okay, he then had a lot of work to do after that to win the set, but that was the moment. That was when you thought, that's Nadal. That's the sort of thing great players do when they need to, you know, and he just did it. It was sort of believably unbelievable from him. And then he found another incredible forehand on set point of his own up the line. And he wrenched that tie breaks from Zverev after Zverev had missed that forehand. It was spine tingling and pulsating to watch Nadal do that.
And then he goes off for what David Law described as a spa break.
He did disappear for a long time, it felt like. And he came back out, and he was nice and cool, and he was sort of, his hair was slicked again, and and he was all organized, and he got his nice new shirt on. He looked like he just popped off for the weekend and come back and was ready to start the working week again. And he was hitting the ball with such authority, because he broke immediately in the first game of the second set, and he went up in the second game as well. And you're just thinking, I mean, Zverev's just had to swallow this set that he should have won, really. He should have won that first set on so many levels. It's really the greatness of one of the all-time champions that has stopped him doing that. And the disappointment he had to stomach as a result of that must have been enormous. And you could see it in his body language. He dropped for a little bit, and Nadal suddenly was hitting the ball with such purity and the authority that he'd shown against Djokovic the other day. So I couldn't believe it when he ended up losing his serve in the second game, because he was up. And then they were just handing their serves to one another for five games in a row.
Could you believe it when he lost his serve in the fourth game, the sixth game, and the eighth game? It was that the second set of that match, not just because of how it ended, which we'll be coming on to very soon, but let's do the events leading up to that first. It was one of the weirdest sets of tennis I've ever seen, given the personnel involved. I mean, it was utterly compelling, but desperately low quality. in the main.
Nadal went an hour and 40 minutes without holding serve in that match. Nadal on clay. It was... I don't think anyone could really believe what they're watching. I don't think anyone was having
fun. It's like Korda Khachanov at Wimbledon when they did 13 in the final set, 13 service breaks.
Yeah, you know that the fourth set tiebreak that Alcaraz played against Zverev, which obviously he ended up losing, but you know, he's 2-1 down in the score, he ends up losing the match in that tiebreak. He looked like he was enjoying it because it was just so high quality and dramatic and, you know, it was a wonderful stage and everything. It couldn't have been more different to that today. Everybody was having a horrible time.
Including everybody watching. And I mean, look, there may be some tennis fans that were in that stadium that are having the time of their lives. And if you've come for the French Open semis and you've seen Nadal and all the rest of it, I'm sure they were. I'm exaggerating. But I've loved every minute of the French Open that I've been here for the last 2 weeks. even on Tuesday when I started to get long COVID symptoms again during a blooming Nadal-Djokovic match. I got through it, folks, don't worry. But I ate a lot that day. But anyway, today, for several hours, I mean, I was doing updates into our Five Live news desks. And so you were in a windowless, I mean, this was the worst case scenario in a way, because I'm in a windowless little booth looking at a screen for 3 hours for less than 2 sets. And I was nearly nodding off at times, trying to watch the match, but just feeling this fatigue coming over me. And I think I looked around and everybody was feeling like that. And I went out for some fresh air. There was no fresh air. There was just low cloud and humidity. And you look at Nadal and you look at Zverev. They look miserable. The umpire looked miserable. It was just, oh.
And you're looking at the clock going, it's more than 3 hours here and we haven't even played 2 sets of tennis. Everyone was doing the projections of how long that match could possibly go. I mean, Pam said if it had gone 5 sets, it was tracking for 7 hours. Now, obviously, you know, the fates intervened and it ended a very different, horrible way. But it going 7 hours and 5 sets would also have been extremely horrible.
That could have ended 5-set tennis because it was the sort of 5-set match. I mean, I love 5-set tennis, and I was not enjoying that.
Mm.
I didn't enjoy. I wasn't thinking, "Oh, I hope this goes 5 sets," you know, and is a classic, because it wasn't a classic. It was there were interesting moments and that sort of thing, but I mean, it just wasn't one of those tennis matches.
There was such a bizarre moment. I think at Nadal serving 4-5. When he finally holds serve, am I describing the right score line, Matt? He's serving 4-5, finally holds serve for the first time in the set, and he celebrates like players do when they're 6-love, 5-love down and they win their first game of the match. It was so completely bizarre. He did one of those ironic, "Way, do me some pity cheers," celebrations. So completely bizarre. And then, of course, they both hold again. Nadal holds at 5-6. He's got the 40-30 point. He takes it. But at the very end of that point, Alexander Zverev is on the stretch on the forehand side and he goes over on his right ankle extremely heavily. We've seen a couple of turns of the ankle this tournament, haven't we? We've seen Karolina Mukova go over. She was able to continue, well, able to, she probably shouldn't have, but she did continue for a set and a bit. She's now got her foot in a boot, we've seen on social media. But this was the most horrible I've seen for a while. He immediately screamed out in pain and, you know, from moments after, it was clear the match was over. Rafa was straight over the other side of the court, wasn't he? The officials and the medics were very quick to get onto the court. A wheelchair was being placed on court, but you know, before you even knew it. And yes, he goes off court for assessment, and there's sort of a murmur reverberating around the stadium, people wondering what's going on. But really, we all knew what was going on.
It was one of the most sickening ones I've seen. I remember Andrea Petkovic having one. I've seen Andrei Chesnikov have one. Michael Stich, and they're the sort of, you don't want to watch the replay of this. It's quite upsetting to me to see it, because I think we've all had ankle turns at various times. I had one last summer where I put a foot, while I was running for a ball with my son, I put my foot in a hole that I didn't see and went over on it. And I nearly blacked out because of the shock. And that's the reaction he had, I felt, was it's just shock. And I mean, there's fear and devastation in the moment because obviously he's trying to win a Grand Slam title and he's right in there. He's right in there. And suddenly the whole thing's over and you're scared and you're upset. And it was, yeah, it was very, very distressing. And you all end up looking, I think everybody in the crowd ends up just sort of looking at each other because there's nothing else to say. The bloke's gone off court in a wheelchair. He came back on crutches, shook hands with the umpire and gave Nadal a hug and he was waved off. But I mean, speaking to Greg Rozetsky, we were commentating with afterwards and we were talking about when he turned his ankle in 98 at Queens and he tried to play Wimbledon and he played half a match and then had to withdraw. And he said, at that point, I was at my peak and that was my best ever chance, really. And I couldn't accept it. I couldn't accept that I was out and that I can't play. He said I had a lot of trouble with my mental health around that time because I really thought this was my time. And so, you know, I would imagine Zverev probably, I mean, he has enormous self-confidence. He thinks he's gonna do more, I'm sure, in the future. But I mean, and this was a way worse ankle turn, I think, than what Greg had. And Greg reckons he'll be out for 6 weeks minimum. And obviously, none of us are doctors, but I mean, he's going to miss Wimbledon. You know, there's no way you're going to play Wimbledon with that ankle. And who knows whether he'll be back for the US Open. I mean, it looked horrible.
Needs to get on to Taylor Fritz's.
Yes.
Yeah.
Surgeon. What body part was that? Was it a knee?
Yes, I believe so.
Do surgeons tend to do multiple...
Don't know.
Knee and ankle specialists.
Probably above our grade here, aren't we, in terms of expertise?
We're in medical corner, folks, which isn't where we want to be. But I'm not sure where we do want to be today because it's all. I keep looking at Matt thinking, have you got anything to say? And Matt sort of is avoiding eye contact because nobody wanted that match to end that way. I mean, I think we did want it to end.
Yes.
Sooner than it was on track to, but obviously not that way. Desperately not that way. It was horrible. Absolutely horrible scenes. It was horrible for the crowd. It was obviously horrible for Zverev. Horrible for Nadal, who of course dealt with it so elegantly, exactly as you'd expect. He, you know, it was such genuine concern and sportsmanship from Rafael Nadal, which is no surprise whatsoever. But it was all so awkward and weird and horrible.
Well, you said to me, Catherine, while we were having dinner, something which I hadn't thought about, whether there would be any kind of impact on Nadal in the final because of the way this match finished. Just the fact that he didn't get the usual moment, he didn't go through by winning the match, you know, just would it affect him at all going into the final? And my immediate reaction was no, I don't think so. You know, it's Nadal, he's through, whatever.
Maybe more fuel in the tank even?
Yeah, exactly. You know, because minimum that was looking like 4.5-5 hours, even if he'd won it in straight sets.
It was 3 hours 13 for less than 2 sets.
I haven't seen a match like that. We've seen over 4 hours in a 3-setter, but for 2 sets... back-to-back like yeah. that, I can't remember one.
I
like
believe
that.
There's never been a straight sets match at a slam, 3 out of 5, that's over 4 hours. There's been best of 3 sets, which have gone over 4 hours, but never a straight sets three-set match. So it was very much on track for that. Anyway, but I was thinking about this, and I was listening to John Wertheim on Tennis Channel this evening, and he made the point that yes, okay, there was the fact that it got cut short, if you can call it short, so it might help him from a physical standpoint. But Nadal has had a very emotional Roland Garros. If you look at the players he's had to play, there was the whole Tony Nadal situation in round 4 against Ogier Aliassime. Okay, maybe it was least impactful for Nadal, but still, there was a situation there, and it was an emotional match. Djokovic, that carries a lot of weight, and you know, there's so much history on the line when they play. This was an emotional finish today, and the final will be, because it's a Roland Garros final. He's going for something completely extraordinary. So he's sort of taking on a lot here, Nadal, and just emotion wise. And I think he will be fine. I think he will handle all that. But it's an extra element that I think is at play here for Nadal this tournament.
And there's also the emotion. I asked him about this in press after his last victory. There's the emotion of what he keeps telling us about, of knowing, feeling, telling everybody that every match he plays could be his last at Roland Garros and of his career. And I asked him, you know, whether that emotional burden has any kind of toll. And he's pretty much said yes, didn't he? He said, you know, it is what it is in classic Rafael Nadal style, but of course it does. You know, that's an incredible weight emotionally to be carrying on his shoulders. So we'll talk about Casper Ruud, obviously, in due course, but regardless of all of it, he'll go into the final as a heavy favourite, I think. But it's not insignificant.
And how about his answer in the Spanish portion of the press conference when he was asked, obviously, it's his birthday today, and he was asked what if a genie with a lamp came along for your birthday and offered you winning the final on Sunday, but keeping your foot as it is, or losing the final and getting a new foot? And I thought Nadal wouldn't engage with this question.
No, he doesn't like hypotheticals, no. Does he, like that? He's straight as an arrow.
And he was straight in there that he would choose losing the final and getting a new foot.
Get
without
rid of this
a doubt.
Foot.
Well, he'd probably go and win another 10 Roland Garros.
I suppose that's, you know, but he was really putting it in terms of life.
Yeah.
He said it's the foot is painful.
It must be miserable. And you think of what Andy Murray was like.
Mm.
When you interviewed him after that match against Bautista Agut, and he was sort of pulling himself onto a stool to sit down, and he couldn't really move about properly, and everything was hurting. He couldn't put his socks on, all these sort of things. And then when he got the resurfacing done, suddenly the pain had gone and his mood lightened. I mean, I get it from Nadal. And when we talk about the emotion, can imagine next week, regardless, win or lose now, he'll be in bits for days, you would have thought. Just how much he's going to have to just kind of get himself over this line. How much is that going to take from him? Probably a heck of a lot.
Mm.
It was reported in Marca, the Spanish newspaper, today that Rafael Nadal has already decided he won't be playing Wimbledon. He'll be taking several weeks off after this clay court season, at the very least. Now, we've been in all Nadal's press conferences. We've trawled his transcript. Matt's been in his Spanish press conferences. We can't find anywhere where he said that. He's certainly not quoted directly in that piece as saying it. There were lots of people going after that story today. Benito, Rafa's PR guy, is denying it completely. That doesn't mean it's not true, but it's certainly not the case that anybody has directly said that. I personally, at this stage, I would be surprised if he plays Wimbledon.
Yeah, same.
But I don't think it's the case that that is out there and that is fact at this stage. But can we have some credit for Matt for knowing the word genie in Spanish, because I consider myself a linguist in French, and
I still do
not know the word for genie.
I genuinely don't know if I do know the word for genie. I just heard the guy say something that I thought was genie, and then lampada, which is lamp. So I got the impression he was talking about a genie.
At that point, you're thinking, why else would they be talking about lamps?
Exactly. And he was offering him a hypothetical. It all led me to genie.
Oh, I like lampada.
Yeah, we've all learned something here today. Look, he said he was physically absolutely fine. He said the conditions were horrible and it was exhausting for him, but physically he's fine. And, you know, that's Rafael Nadal fine, which is obviously absolutely excruciating pain. But
normal people not getting out
exactly.
of bed pain sort of thing.
But at least that's good to hear. And, you know, he's had some long matches. He's had some grueling matches. He absolutely would not have wanted this match to end the way it did, but taking away the circumstance of it, just the fact that it was shorter than it would have been is to Nadal's benefit without question.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Just make sure he's got dry shorts for Sunday.
And also, I mean, that match was right in the balance.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Zverev was hurting him from the baseline. The conditions were perfect for him to hit through Nadal.
It was in Zverev's hands, wasn't it? He was making a lot of errors. As I say, it was low quality. But he was the playmaker. You felt like it was on Zverev's racket.
You said it at the start, Catherine. Nadal's big shots just weren't really infiltrating Zverev's defence. Mm. Whereas normally, I mean, look, I still think it's quite a good matchup for Zverev generally. I think he does move well in that side-to-side kind of way. And he can slide and he can get him back. And then he's so good with the turn it back and on the stretch, all these things. But normally, Nadal's got a way to hurt you, no matter who you are. In those conditions, it was really tough. There was only really that spurt at the end of the first set tiebreak and also start of the second set when he was suddenly fresh again. But a miserable day for Nadal, really, to just manage and get through.
He said it himself. I was surviving.
Yeah.
I was surviving. I had a lot of surviving moments.
But he
called it a miracle.
Yeah.
That he won the first set.
To me, look, he's through his big challenge now. Mm. Now, he may not pull up fully fit or something on Sunday. Anything can still happen, but in terms of matchups, I think he's seen off the big danger now.
The weather forecast, interestingly, on Sunday is supposed to be similar to today. Now, obviously, that will probably turn on its head because we were all forecasting that today would be, you know, a day of absolute splendor.
Oh,
and
it
that,
was, anyway.
That didn't pan out. But it's not forecast to be great on Sunday. Could be another roof closed situation for the sake of all of our well-being. We hope not. But he'll be playing Casper Ruud in Sunday's final, who I would think would feel similarly displeased about those sorts of conditions and having the roof closed. So I guess it's a net neutral. Whereas, you know, for Nadal today against Zverev and his flatter big hitting, it was a net negative for Nadal. Let's talk about Casper Ruud against Marin Cilic. David, you commentated on this one alongside Greg Rozetsky. Four sets for Casper Ruud. Tell us about it.
Well, first set, Ruud looked like a rabbit in headlights. He was really startled. He was unsure of himself. His backhand was an utter liability. You could have targeted that backhand, and this is one thing I do think with the Nadal forehand. That ain't Zverev's backhand. You know, that is not going to handle Nadal's game very well. I don't think at all. Now, look, he may be able to play it into form just by using it a lot. And as the sets went on, sets 2, 3, and 4, he was hitting winners with the backhand. He was hitting it, but hitting it a lot down the line. For
he was
winners.
Catching Cilic out there, wasn't he?
He was. And look, he committed to it and he was using it offensively. But he was being picked on in that first set, and Cilic was playing the sort of stuff we've been watching. He was glorious, but it turned. And I think a lot of the reason it turned was Ruud coming out with a different attitude in set two. He came out to take it from Cilic. In the first set, he was just an opponent. He was getting bossed, and he looked flat. And you kind of think, well, he can't be flat in a Grand Slam semi-final. But he just wasn't doing anything. He was just existing as a tennis player. And then suddenly, set 2, 3, 4, you were reminded that this guy's got a bit of spite as a tennis player. He can hurt you if he goes for it, but he has to go for it. And I mean, look, he's going to have to go for it against Nadal, and I just don't think that back. He is a very one-sided player. That forehand is great. The backhand is weak, relatively speaking. It is weak.
How much of a part did Marin Cilic have to play in his own downfall today? Obviously, as you say, very strong in that opening set. Seemed to fade to me in a way that I wasn't expecting for a man with the body of a 25-year-old.
Yeah, I mean, look, he did fade physically to some degree, but I mean, he had one of the worst overhead smash days I've ever seen from a tennis player.
How does somebody with a serve that good smash like
that? It's extraordinary. I, I, and I'm not, I can't really, you know, I think of when Marin Cilic gets tight, the forehand starts shanking and the serve twitches start and things like that. I haven't really thought of the smashes. Now, somebody may say, well, you haven't watched enough matches. I can't recall in all the time I've watched Cilic him have a bad overhead smash day. But I counted 7 smashes, 6 misses. Oof. Out of 7. Literally missing them. He missed 2 in a game fairly early on. And I think that that immediately put doubt in his mind. He missed 1 bounce smash where the ball just about cleared the net from his opponent. And he gets himself into the tram lines to run round it. He just smashed it into the net. And then there was another one. We got to the point in commentary where Rude would lift a lob and I'd say, uh-oh, you know, the ball's in the air. Marin Cilic is underneath it. Oh, no, he's not. He's smashed it long. And it was like that. You knew what was coming, and I felt terribly sorry for him because he couldn't figure out how to get around this.
It's a double negative, isn't it? Missing a smash, because it's obviously terrible for you and wounding of your own confidence, but also such a boon to your opponent. It's basically showing them your emotional hand, isn't it? Which is that this I'm feeling it a bit. You know, this shot that I would make in my sleep on the practice court.
There's a pride element
missing.
As well. Tennis players don't think they. Tim Hemmer used to say, "If the ball's in the air, the point should be over." And Dan Evans has got a good smash, and I know that he missed the one against Stan Wawrinka, and he was match point up, or he didn't put it away, and he still talks about that. These players, they have a pride. They think that they should be able to put away a smash any time it's there.
You missed one the other day, Matt, didn't you?
Yeah, got told off by my partner.
I've got a terrible overhead smash. Really, it's embarrassing. I'm 6'7", and I don't know how you do it. I'm Marin Cilic, like rubbish version.
Well, Matt got told to leave one yesterday, and he went for it and missed.
And I took it anyway.
Just disaster scenario.
Yeah, just call it.
Is that what he said?
Sheepishly moved to the other side of the court.
Okay.
Didn't take another smash all day. just on the match and how it turned, I also felt like in the closing stages, Rude had a physical edge. Like I really felt like Cilic had kind of gone.
He looked 33 at the end.
Yeah,
Casper Ruud saying I've actually got the body of 25-year-old.
Well, that's the thing. And Casper Ruud, you know, that he became the player that we've become accustomed to as the match wore on at the start. You're thinking, I'm sure I used to say you were good. And this is rubbish. I was really critical, and I feel sorry for him because you know I think he was just tight. I think he's just incredibly tight. And what an occasion for him! I think he's a really nice lad, Casparilla. Seems like a really good bloke, and he's a great pro. But at the end, Marin Cilic looked like he'd been playing in the Nadal Zverev conditions. He was so sweaty. He looked so knackered, and yet you looked up. There's no roof on, and it's beautiful blue sky. Mm. It just all went wrong for him today. I think maybe he just hit the wall as well.
There was one phenomenal game that Rude played when he was serving out the second set because he fell love 40 down.
Yeah, that was amazing.
And that was a moment where I thought, oh, okay, Rude's worked his way back into this match, but this is where we see whether he's kind of ready to win it. And he falls love 40 down, and I'm thinking, oh dear, okay, maybe he's not ready.
And he kind of ranted towards his dad, and his dad just gave a motion of calm down.
And then he played 5 perfect points. I mean, I wrote down forehand winner, unreturned serve, forehand winner, ace, backhand down the line winner. I mean, it was just perfection. And suddenly, from that point on, he was in total control of the match. It was a really key moment, I think, in this contest.
There was also an exceptionally weird turn of events where a protester made their way onto court, a climate change protester, and I think reports are that the young woman glued herself to the net. It was certainly a situation serious enough that the players were removed from the court and TV cameras cut away, obviously.
Also put a wire around her neck. And clamped herself to the
right
net as well.
And obviously that was a situation. The couple of angles on this. Just firstly, the tennis one. I guess because of the inexperience experience of Casper Ruud, I expected that upset to cause him upset. And especially given the fact that that would have been an opportunity for them to speak to their coaches. Any kind of interruption in play like that, you know, you get to go back to the locker room and speak to your coaches. I thought that would be a boost to Marin Cilic. And I was really impressed that Casper Ruud didn't let that rock him.
Yeah. He seems quite a good compartmentaliser. You know, because as you say, they went off and it was almost like the start of the match again, because they had to go through a whole knock-up. They've swept the court, all that sort of stuff. And it was an unsettling 20 minutes because of the way she came onto the court and nobody would go near her. All the security guards, nobody was going near her. So you're wondering, well, why are they not going anywhere near her? And why are the players being taken off to the corners of the court and everybody's looking at each other? Nobody knows what's going to happen. And so, yeah, from a player's perspective, I think you do have a job on your hands to gather yourself when you come back out. And you did do an excellent job.
It was a bit worrying, wasn't it? How easily it seemed that she was able to make her way.
Yeah, I mean, that's
onto the court.
That's problematic, and my mind immediately went back to the 2009 final here when Roger Federer was playing, and somebody came out, I think, had a Spanish flag and put it on top of his head while he's on the court. You know, in the middle of the final, and I know from Queens how difficult it is to stop people getting on the court if they want to get on. If they're near the front row, it's very, very difficult. So I do have some sympathy, but that did seem quite easy to do for her. And they, I'm sure they'll have to have a very close look at that in the future, you know.
Not a great week for Amélie Mauresmo, is it?
Well, I feel for her because, yeah. I mean, I think as Hannah said, it's kind of a baptism of fire. And these are the things with tournaments. I've had several of these sorts of things, that bomb scares. David, 10 years ago, since David Nalbandian boots a blooming line judge up in the air.
We should celebrate that anniversary, David.
You know, that was a Marin Cilic final. Sitting there, Marin Cilic against David Nalbandian. Half the press have gone to Eastbourne or Birmingham because nobody's interested in the final. And we're thinking, oh, we're going to have a nice quiet finals day. And suddenly, oh my God, he's just gone and kicked the line judge in the air. And suddenly everybody's out onto the court. You know, you never know as a tournament organiser what's coming next. And it isn't easy. So I always try to think, I don't want to be that journalist that just whinges about the organisation all the time, because I really know what it's like and it's not easy. But they will need to. When these things happen, you just have to go and be honest. Oh, crikey, we didn't quite get that one right. We've got to go and have a look at it and work out how to make things tighter next time.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life, and of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
We'll have a bit of opportunity tomorrow to preview the men's finals. There's no need to deep dive on it now. Nadal against Ruud, first time they've played one another, which is interesting in itself, isn't it? They should have played before especially now. That's one of those quirky
great
draw
clay
things.
Quarters, and Ruud's been around for 3 years, and they've got the whole Rafael Nadal Academy link, haven't they?
Is that a problem for Casper Ruud, though, the fact that it's his hero and sort of his professor, you know, having been at his academy? I don't know what the official name for that link is. You know, obviously it wasn't Nadal himself that was coaching him, but I don't know. It's a nice line in a story, but is it a nice thing for the final?
It's one of several problems Casper Ruud's got, I think. Maybe not even the biggest one.
Definitely
What's
not the biggest one.
What's the biggest one?
Rafael Nadal. The bloke has won 13 of them.
Yeah. Okay. Let's leave the preview there, shall we? Let's leave those appetites whetted.
We've got 24
for the men's
hours
final.
To work out a way that Casper Ruud can win it.
But it is a big moment for him. It's a big deal, I'm sure, in Norway that he's got to this final. I was, you know, we always make our pre-tournament predictions. I was looking for a way not to have Casper Ruud in the quarterfinals because I was not convinced by him this clay court season. I know he won Geneva, but, you know, it was a much weaker draw, and I just didn't see anyone who would beat him before the quarterfinals, but I was not confident that he would get that far. And for him to do this, I really do think it's an impressive run for him. And, you know, Casper Ruud Grand Slam finalist, I know he's been improving on clay, but I didn't think that was on the cards this soon into his career. I feel like Nick Kyrgios is probably deleting some tweets as we speak.
What's all Garun doing?
Doing some tweets.
Yeah.
Yeah. Paul Garun and Nick Kyrgios are like tag teaming each other in.
Oh, goodness. There was more today, wasn't there? Eurosport did
Everybody
an interview
hates
with
Casper Ruud.
With Casper Ruud, in which he, as exactly as reported last night in that piece that I read out, was denying the events that Holger Rune says happened in the locker room after their quarterfinal. Eurosport tweeted the video with a transcription of a few of the quotes, and Holger Rune just replied, "eye roll emoji." And again, it's just right in the sweet spot. It's all absolutely brilliant. Okay, so more men's final preview tomorrow. We did a lot of chat about Świątek against Goff yesterday with Pam as well, of course. But we'll have another word on that in a moment. But just going to whiz you through a few other things that happened today. The double is still on. Coco Gauff and Jessica Pegula won their semi-final today against Madison Keys and Taylor Townsend. They went in two straight sets. Good match, this one. But Gauff and Pegula coming out on top. They will meet the all-French pairing of Kiki Mladenovic and Caroline Garcia. They're back together and they're rolling.
Wait, that's on Sunday, is it?
Yes, it's
it is.
On Sunday. Ooh. They beat Kichanok and Ostapenko today in three sets.
Oh, I want to watch that.
And I saw an interview with them afterwards. I was interested when I saw that they were back together as a pairing, whether this was a very sort of functional, almost mercenary decision to get back together. Okay, you know, we're not friends anymore, but we're still a great doubles team. Let's get the band back together. But I watched a video with them on Prime Video France, an interview with them on Prime Video France, and they seemed very, very friendly to one another. It was nice to see.
Good.
So hatchets buried.
I'm glad.
Seemingly, anyway. The top seeds, 22-year-old Sam Schroeder and 19-year-old Niels Vink, the Dutch pairing, won the men's quad wheelchair doubles title. They beat Imanitu Silva of Brazil and Heath Davidson of Australia in two straight sets. This is Schroeder's second French Open doubles title, his first with Niels Vink. You might remember the name Sam Schroeder. He was the guy that ended the career of Dylan Alcott at the Australian Open earlier on this year in the singles quad wheelchair. He's such a talent for the future and, well, for now, but I think Dylan Alcott felt very philosophical about Sam Schroeder being the one to end his career because he's very much the future of wheelchair tennis. And his partner, Niels Vink, even younger, 19 years old. Vink went to the London Paralympics aged 9 and instantly decided that para sport was what he wanted to do. He says he tried a few sports before tennis, But as soon as he tried tennis, he knew it was the one. And I learnt that information from his own website, which is called neilsonwheels.com.
Oh, I love that.
That's good.
I enjoyed my visit to neilsonwheels.com. It was excellent. It's their second Grand Slam doubles title. They won the US Open last year. The mixed doubles title yesterday, we should have mentioned this yesterday, but stuff was happening. The mixed doubles title yesterday was won by the scratch pairing, Ebi Shibahara of Japan and Wesley Kuhlhoff of the Netherlands. They beat Ulrika Ekeri of Norway, or Ekeri. I think Ekeri. I think Casper Ruud wished her luck.
That was a lovely moment, wasn't it? After he'd got to the semi-final, after he'd beaten Rune in the aggro match.
That's what it's going to be known as forever now.
He shouted her out and said that, you know, she's gone one further than me already, and it's a great tournament for Norway. And then I believe he was on the court watching the final as well.
That's lovely. It didn't work. They did lose, she and Joran Vliegen, to Shibahara and Wesley Kuhlhoff, 7-6, 6-2. The partnership between Shibahara and Kuhlhoff started with an Instagram DM from Kuhlhoff to Shibahara. They'd never met before.
Great partnerships.
They'd obviously crossed in corridors and everything, but they'd never met before playing this tournament. And he says that Ebi took a while to respond.
Got there in the end. People don't call each other anymore, do they?
No.
Oh, God, no.
It's a real problem for
look
films.
Look at Matt's face.
I don't want to call anyone.
Yeah, Matt barely wants to talk to people, David. He definitely doesn't want to do
Matt's
it on the phone.
At this, why would I call
hate it
anyone?
When my phone rings.
I do too,
I've
actually.
Noticed that when I call you.
It just feels like a really aggressive move to call someone, doesn't it? Yeah.
I'm from the day when you
voice
used to...
notes, David.
Voice notes, lovely. Love a voice
note.
You
like my voice notes, don't you? I mean, I see, I'm from the day when you know you'd put your finger in the dial and go.
You're exaggerating, David. You're not that old.
No, we did. We used to have one of those phones when I was a little lad.
A little lad.
And then when I found out that there were phones with buttons on, I was so pumped. I didn't know that, because they've got those in America on Dallas, you know, on the telly.
And it's a lot of references that Matt can't respond to.
Is it rude if someone rings you to not answer and to text them back and say...
Oh, no, do it all the time to some of my closest friends.
Matt. Okay, fine.
Thanks.
I'm glad I'm not alone in this.
Yeah,
you want to speak on your time?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, okay. I'm glad I'm not alone.
I'll tell you what I find rude is when I go around to visit someone and the phone goes and they say, I've just got to go and get this. And I'm like, okay. And they go and get it and they spend 20 minutes on the phone. I'm thinking, but I'm actually here. If I'd have called, I'd have got more time.
Who's doing that?
Someone I know. I can't say my mum.
It's your mum, isn't it?
It's your mum.
Totally your mum.
It was
hello,
such,
David's mum.
It was such a weird day today. David ended up slacking.
David's
his
dragging
mom.
His mum.
Stop doing that, mum.
Tomorrow is going to be a brighter day, folks. This is what we've got to look forward to. From 11 a.m, the women's wheelchair singles final. It's the top two seeds, Dida De Groot against Yui Kamiji. Great for them to have Chatrier Billing tomorrow. And then it's the women's singles final, 3 p.m. for Iga Świątek against Coco Gauff. Then we have the men's doubles final, Ivan Dodig and Austin Krajicek against Marcelo Arevalo. And I think he's from El Salvador, isn't he? Yes, he's from El Salvador. And Jean-Julien Roger, from the Netherlands, of being Andy Murray's best man fame. That's the men's doubles final. Are we desperate enough to talk about legends matches? No, we're not, are we?
Who's in it?
Oh, goodness me, there seems to be a lot of them. The women's legends final is tomorrow. I'll give you that one. And it's Gisela Dulco and Gabriella Sabatini against Flavia Panetta and Francesca Schiavone.
Oh, that sounds quite good.
Well, David, it's last on Longland tomorrow, so you can watch it from your favourite seats if you fancy.
I will.
And they do get good crowds over there.
I am going.
For the legends. Off you go then, David. The girls' singles final is the unseeded S. Sierra, Solana Sierra, against the ninth seed, another young Czech, Lucy Havlikova. And the boys' singles final tomorrow is the unseeded Gilles Arnaud Bailly of Belgium against the 14th-seeded Frenchman, French boy, Gabriel Debreu. So that's what's happening tomorrow. Let's stop talking about today, shall we? Let's give everyone a break. Brief prediction for Świątek against Goff, please.
Well, it's the final I predicted, you see, so I'm not really sure.
Great. You were waiting for us to credit you there, weren't you, David?
Making an already brilliant podcast even better, David. Thanks for that. Matt, do you want to go?
I put mine in the newsletter. You can have a look in there.
But is that what you actually think, or have you've done that prediction because you need points?
I have, but I have also thought that I think it's going the distance one way or another.
That's so annoyingly vague.
Well, I want them to
all
open
these people
the
that
newsletter
have
and have a look
an hour
in
of this podcast.
newsletter.
Trudged through what has been, frankly, one of our worst of the fortnight. They get here and David says, I'm not giving you a prediction. You have to subscribe to the newsletter.
Do you want
to
hear?
Really annoying.
I forgot one thing to tell you about. When they brought out the handset phone with the numbers on the handset and with, like, you could pull out an aerial in your house. Oh, I thought that was so cool.
It's a good job no one's listening, isn't it? Matt, what's going to happen tomorrow? Save us.
Iga Świątek, I think, is going to win. I agree. I think Coco Gauff will get a set. Hasn't dropped a set all tournament. She's playing really, really well. I think she can hurt Świątek. I think she can live with her in a lot of the rallies because her movement's so good. But I do think Świątek's peak level will tell eventually. And I'm predicting a 35th win in a row, equaling Venus Williams' consecutive streak of victories in 2000.
There we go. A sensible prediction about what may or may not happen tomorrow. If you want to know what kind of ridiculous Hail Mary David ends up going for in order to...
The most extreme, I can promise.
To resuscitate his predictions hopes, then do subscribe to the newsletter. We have our tournament sponsor, Cooper,
right,
our
Cooper.
Mascot. Hello, Cooper. Sorry about today's episode. We've had ropey material to work with.
If you like, Cooper, we can ditch this one. You don't have to sponsor this one.
You don't have to put your name to this one if you don't want to. Let us know
edit you out if you like.
We've got our mascots who probably never want their names next to us. Carter, we didn't do well today. Well, actually, Carter, we were wronged today because I went for Rafael Nadal in 4 and, you know,
That wasn't what happened.
No.
But you can't predict injury. I feel like there should be,
I don't know,
a facility for...
We have a facility for walkovers.
Anyway.
Anyway, I got points.
What?
Kasper Ruud in 4.
Oh, good, move on.
40 points.
We'll move on. David, you've got Darwin.
All right, Darwin.
That didn't go well either. Billie Jean has got Billie Jean King and Ilana Klaus. Billie Jean King received the Légion d'honneur today, which is the highest honour in the land here in France. She received it from Emmanuel Macron. It was absolutely wonderful, uplifting scenes. Good on them for doing it. I've no idea why they're doing it now.
Matched her glasses to her medal.
She matched her glasses to her medal, David.
What colour was the medal?
Red.
As in, you know, the little bit of ribbon that the medal's attached
Amazing.
To. It was really uplifting. It was absolutely lovely. He embraced her like they were long-lost friends, Macron. It was a very lingering kiss. Chris Albert Lee and Kyle Weingartner are our executive producers and top blokes. And here are the lucky people that have got shout-outs for today's episode.
Yes, with apologies to Simon Williams.
Right, Simon.
Hello, Simon.
Like Simon Briggs.
Like Simon Briggs.
And Simon Williams is from Leicester, and he says that he watches tennis for the pantomime aggro.
Oh, well, we've had some of that in this episode.
Well, maybe it isn't such a bad episode.
No, it's
for
perfect.
Simon. We love that.
Fit.
Hello, Simon.
Cheers, Simon.
We also have Marnell Capagoda.
Oh, hello.
Which is a Sri Lankan name.
Oh, yes, I remember Marnell. Yes, contacting us recently.
Yes, signed up very recently, has an 11-year-old daughter and was inspired to sign up as a friend of the Tennis Podcast.
Oh.
Following Catherine's comments about Emily Maresmo and the scheduling this week. So thank you, Marnell.
Thank you ever so much, Marnell. Your message meant a great deal. And yeah, it means a lot. Your support means a lot. Thank you ever so much.
And the last one today is Peter Swenson.
Ooh.
Who is in Ohio, and that is a Danish name.
Oh, right.
Mm.
Oh, probably not enjoying...
Probably not the show for him.
Well, maybe Peter is also into the pantomime aggro. Imagine if you were a Danish tennis fan and you were into pantomime aggro.
Well, then that has been a good couple of days.
You know, you've got the man.
And Peter shares a birthday with Catherine.
Oh, how does he know that? Should I be creeped out?
He said from the newsletter.
Okay. Great. You're in the clear, Peter. Thanks ever so much for your support.
By the way, Caroline Wozniacki used to like a bit of pantomime aggro as well, didn't she? You know, she'd always
but in a really chippy way.
When she lost to Makarova at Wimbledon. That's the one I always think of.
And she said she's not going to win her next match.
She didn't play very well and she's not going to go much further in the tournament.
I kind of love that. Peter, thank you ever so much.
That's very Martina Hingis energy, isn't it? look, folks, today's going to be better. No,
tomorrow.
Sorry. Oh, God.
It is tomorrow.
It is tomorrow
don't
already.
Don't worry, folks.
And I've already ruined it. No, look, it's going to be better. Thanks for sticking with us. Today, it was a weird one. But we do these podcasts regardless, and we've got two more to go. So make sure you join us for tomorrow's wrap-up of the women's final, Iga Świątek against Coco Gauff. Make sure you subscribe to the newsletter to find out what weird and wonderful prediction David is going for. Tell your friends, leave us an iTunes review, and become a friend of the pod if you've enjoyed, not specifically this episode.
or maybe you're a different...
If you've enjoyed this one, chances are you will enjoy the others.
Exactly. Exactly.
Good sales
pitch. So, we'll speak to you tomorrow.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.